Hello, and welcome to Lecture 15. I hope you're all enjoying this series and the topics that we are exploring. Please feel free to ask any questions that you have about parenting and behavior management of children with special needs by calling in and leaving a recording of your question. I'll be happy to address them in the order that they arrive to me. Just to recap, here is a list of the 14 lectures that we've done so far. First, we talked about what comes first, behaviors or emotions. Then we discussed doctors' predictions. We introduced ignore negative behaviors, INB, and separate without comment, SWC. We answered questions about adolescents and preemies. We talked about staying organized and consistent, and we explored sibling rivalry in children who are typically developing and children with special needs. We also discussed children with ADHD and how their needs should be addressed. Then we headed deeper into phase one, INB, SWC, and missions in greater detail, using adapted versions of the Are Your Hands Full audiobook, volume one. This should have given you a jump start to actually start the Hands Full program, preferably on one child at a time. We also added more outlooks and insights that are relevant while you might be implementing phase one of the Hands Full program. And last time we delved even deeper into some of the phenomena that you might be experiencing while working through phase one, notably the expected outcome that your child's behaviors will likely get worse before they get better when you start this program. And today, we are going to explore the importance of honesty when communicating with children. Unfortunately, parents tend to think that they don't have to be totally truthful to their children. I'm not 100% sure where this comes from exactly, but most parents think that their children won't see through their lies and exaggerations, either because they don't understand how clever and intuitive children are, or they think that their age is an advantage, which allows them to manipulate their young children for whatever purpose they think is necessary at that time. I'm not really sure. But in order to address this, we first have to discuss every human being's primary and first need. Every human being is born into this world needing one thing and one thing only during the first few months, and that is safety and security. We have all observed newborns who couldn't care less who feeds or cares for them, but dissolve into fits of hysteria when they are unswaddled and undressed. It's only a few months later that a newborn, as he or she transitions into infancy, will start to take a look around and notice the people in his or her environment and begin to process love and affection. But for the next 120 years, the primary need, the first need, the most important need remains safety and security. Each of us remembers exactly where we were when an event in our lives happened that threatened our illusion of safety and security. I remember exactly where I was when 9/11 hit. Many of our listeners are probably too young to remember that, but we all have moments in our lives where we get shaken up or rattled, and these moments become etched in our brains forever because, once again, our illusion of safety was interrupted by that moment. So now that you know that your children, regardless of whether they are developing normally or have special needs, always need to feel safe, why would we lie or exaggerate to them? Why would we do anything to shake up their trust in us? There is no really clear answer because I don't think that parents intentionally want to undo their children's trust. I believe the habit of lying comes from general lack of honesty in the culture that we're in, or the fact that people actually lie to themselves and have difficulty facing the truth at times, or simply the fact that life is so busy and so hectic that we often don't stop to think about the ramifications of what we're doing and what we're saying. So let's first spend some time exploring trust. What is it? Why is it so important? What happens when we break our children's trust? What happens when children are left not knowing if they can trust us or not? So I'll tell you. Children are amazingly resilient. If they get a sense that they can't trust us, they will try and try and test again until they find that they can. We call these behaviors testing behaviors. And these testing behaviors usually come in the form of behaviors that we, the parents, interpret as misbehaviors. The child acts up to see what we are going to do. And we do the wrong things, such as yelling at them or giving in to them, or any reaction on our part that makes the child feel unsafe. So what will the child do? He or she will try again. And when he tries again, he is really testing us. So for example, your child asks you for a cookie and you say no, and your child tantrums until you are so exhausted from the tantrum that you unpick the bottle and give in to the cookie. Whoops, now the child feels very unsafe. Wow, the person taking care of me cannot stand behind his or her word. That's very scary when you're a young child. But young children are resilient. They don't give up. They will surely try again. This time they will ask for the lolly or a toy in the toy store. And they will cry and you will panic. Oh no, another tantrum. But meantime, deep down in every child's subconscious mind is that very important need for safety and security. And if the person who's taking care of me doesn't have the strength to withstand my kvetching, my complaining, my crying, then I don't feel so safe anymore. And so the cycle goes. You get the idea. So now let's take a listen to a piece on trust from the adapted version of the Are Your Hands Full audiobook, Volume 1. Establishing trust. As parents, one of our primary goals should be maintaining our children's trust. Because in order to grow into emotionally healthy adults, children need the security that results from trusting their parents. The basic foundation of trust is truthfulness. Never lie to children or deceive them. Many parents mistakenly think that because they are older than their children and have the advantage of intelligence, they can fool them. Chronological age, however, has no correlation with intuition, and children are surprisingly capable of seeing through deception. Even if children are incapable of openly expressing their awareness of deception, they can feel it. Children will detect parents' lies and will begin to feel unsafe and insecure, which will result in negative behaviors. Thus, it is crucial to be consistently truthful with children. Unfortunately, many adults are not truthful even to themselves and tell frequent white lies to others in the presence of their children. Children detect these lies immediately. It is therefore imperative that parents make sure that they mean exactly what they say. I can think of some lies that I've said to my children over the years. I remember once telling Libby during a visit to the dentist that if you behave this time, you won't have to come to the dentist ever again. And last Chalamoid, I told Chevy, don't feel bad. Maybe next Chalamoid we can fly to Europe and spend a few days there. I surely remember telling Yossi, if I see you riding your rollerblades in this house one more time, I will take them away and never give them back. I also remember saying white lies while I was in my children's presence. I remember that once I was running late while driving my children home from an outing. When I was about 15 minutes away from the house, I received a phone call from the plumber telling me that he was already waiting outside my door to install our new washing machine. I immediately apologized for not being home, but then I stated clearly that I was only a few blocks away and I would be there in less than 5 minutes. My children, I'm sure, overheard me telling this white lie to the plumber in order to prevent the plumber from leaving. On another occasion, it was 3 days before Pesach, and I was speaking with my sister on the phone, describing the variety and number of cakes and kugels that I had already made. For effect, I added and multiplied the number and variety of culinary creations that were completed. I'm sure that my exaggeration did not go unheard or unnoticed by my children. In these examples, the mother made statements that did not or will not happen, thus causing her children to devalue her statements. Young children under the age of 8 cannot comprehend the concept of a gray area. Rather, everything in life is black or white.
yes or no. Therefore, the concepts of I think or maybe and we'll see are not clearly understood since they are neither a yes or a no. Parents will notice that when their children make a request that receives a gray response such as we'll see, the children will continue to make the same request until a black or white answer is provided. Often, when parents are reluctant to respond to a child's request with a clear no, they choose a more evasive approach, such as we'll see, even though they have no intention of considering the matter at all. Your child will probably be more comfortable with a no than with a we'll see in this instance because he probably detects that you are being untruthful, and he will be able to process a response of no more easily because it is concrete. It is preferable to give a young child a response of no, even if the result is a tantrum, rather than string a child along with empty maybe responses, which are either untrue or he cannot process well. Because of young children's black and white thinking, they will interpret anything that a parent promises that does not materialize as a lie. Children do not understand that unforeseen circumstances cause parents to change their minds. Therefore, parents must be very careful not to promise anything to a child unless they are certain that it will happen. If parents are not positive that they can keep their word or carry through with a plan, then they should not discuss it. I just experienced an episode like this last week. I was in the process of juggling a hectic supper and bedtime routine when Mindy asked if she could go outside to play. It was getting late, and I could not take her out, but I felt bad, so I said, "Mindy, I cannot take you out now, but tomorrow, as soon as you come home from school, we will go to the park together." Mindy was satisfied with the response. The following day, Mindy came home from school full of anticipation, but I could not follow through with my commitment because I had to go to the doctor with Libby, who had woken up with an unexplained fever. To top it all off, just as we pulled back into the driveway after the appointment, the skies darkened and it began to rain. Mindy was devastated. "But you told me you would take me to the park today right after school!" I was at a loss. As much as I tried to explain to her that I had not known that these circumstances would arise, Mindy was inconsolable. You can always think in your mind, but you can never unsay. The best way to prevent such scenarios is to avoid planning out loud. In the previous story, our mother should have planned the trip to the park in her mind and not told her daughter about it until the following day when it was actually going to happen. In this way, she would have avoided unnecessary devaluation of her words and the disappointment and frustration that followed. Even though last time I had really intended to carry out my commitment to Mindy, I can't help but remember another time when I said something that I really had no intention of carrying out at all. We were about to go on a Chol HaMoed picnic trip with the entire extended family, including grandparents, uncles, aunts, and cousins. After a frantic morning of hectic preparation, the children were all dressed in their matching outfits and the food was packed into the trunk. As we piled into the car, Chevy and Libby began to fight about who would sit next to the baby. I, whose nerves were by now completely frayed, turned around in my seat and said, "If this fighting does not stop this second, we are staying home." All the children in that car knew that I had absolutely no intention of staying home. After a whole morning of preparation for this event, it was quite clear to them that it was not something we would miss. But with this one statement, I most likely created a scenario that lowered my credibility in my children's eyes. They now understood that I don't always mean what I say, and there are times that I don't carry through with my words. They understood that they can't trust me all the time. Additionally, my statement was ineffective in stopping the fighting because I unwittingly reinforced the argument by speaking openly about it. Some parents resort to threats that they would never dream of carrying out. This greatly diminishes their credibility and plants deeper seeds of insecurity in their children. Once, while waiting online in an airport to check in for a flight, I saw a family consisting of parents, grandparents, and 8 children who were quite obviously traveling abroad for a family wedding. Luggage, gowns, garment bags, and other assorted paraphernalia were piled high around them as the father was checking his family in. It was obvious that it had taken a tremendous amount of effort to prepare for this trip. Amidst the commotion, the father, who was sorting through the many tickets and passports in his hand, noticed that two of his children were arguing and pushing each other. He singled out a specific child and said in a loud voice, "Chaim, you are not coming with us." Did that father really mean what he said? Was he planning to carry out this threat? I assume not. The entire family was in the airport. They were all packed up, and the flight was leaving in an hour. Would they stop everything and make arrangements for Chaim to go back home? Highly unlikely. The parent and the child both knew that the statement was not true. Thus, the child's trust in his father's words was diminished, which in turn caused him to feel insecure. Although the child may know that his father would never leave him alone in the airport, the mere words would cause a child to feel unsafe and insecure. Try to avoid negativity as much as possible. However, if you have erroneously made a negative statement, which is feasible and safe to carry out, it must be carried out in order to maintain your credibility and trust. Regardless of any inconvenience this might create for you, your words must be carried out so that your children can develop a trust in you. I remember a time when I made such an error. I had told the girls that after I finished a few more things in the kitchen, we would go shopping for new shoes. They were extremely excited about the trip, but after the initial elation wore off, they began badgering me about when we would be leaving. Out of extreme frustration, I said, "If you ask me when we are leaving one more time, we will not go shopping for shoes today." The children continued to badger me. Even though my true intention was not to cancel the trip, the planned shoe shopping trip should have been rescheduled. If a statement that you erroneously made is dangerous or impossible to implement, it should not, under any circumstances, be carried out. Right, so even though I once said, "If you don't get into this car right now, I'm leaving you here in the parking lot," I should never actually carry out such a threat.
So now that you understand the importance of children trusting us and not lying directly to them and not doing anything to make them distrust us, here comes an even deeper concept. This concept is called reverse psychology. What does reverse psychology have to do with dishonesty? Give a listen.
Reverse psychology. Modern day psychology versus Torah principles. Though extremely popular in the secular world, reverse psychology is in fact a form of deception. It is a ruse designed to facilitate obedience by presenting a situation that is exactly opposite to the desired outcome in order to manipulate the already contrary child. Essentially, reverse psychology employs dishonesty to reinforce disobedience. I used to do this all the time. It was time for Chevy to take her medicine. After a special drink was prepared and the medicine was measured out, Chevy started fussing and she didn't want to take it. In an effort to coax the process along, I said, "Okay, so I'll take it instead, and then I'll get to drink that special fruit punch." "No," Chevy responded, "I'll take it." In this example, our mother used reverse psychology to get the medicine down, but in the process, she achieved two very negative side effects. Firstly, she was blatantly dishonest, because both she and her daughter knew she had no intention of taking that medicine. Secondly, she caused her daughter to disobey her because Chevy was only willing to take the medicine because it negated her mother's wishes. I remember doing this on another occasion. After a hot summer day, I told Libby that it was time to take a bath. In defiance, he said, "No, I'm not taking a bath." "That's okay," I said. "You can be dirty then." Immediately, Libby responded, "Okay, I'll take a bath." Again, the side effects are, firstly, our mother was blatantly dishonest because both she and Libby knew that it was not acceptable for him to remain dirty on that very hot day. Secondly, She caused Leiby to disobey her because he was only willing to take a bath because his mother said that he did not have to. Based on this, it becomes clear that reverse psychology has no place in a Yiddish home. As parents, we need to model honesty and obedience rather than deception and defiance inherent in this technique. The problem with reverse psychology is that it is fueled by and ultimately encourages through repetition the child's need to be contrary and defiant, which is understandable because Yetzer Lev Ha'adam Ra Menurav, a person's tendency during youth is to be evil. Most children, when told to take a bath, will not want to take a bath because the normal reaction is to want to do the opposite of what mommy wants. So if you say the opposite of what you mean in order to manipulate your child's actions, you've exercised the child's defiance mechanism and strengthened it. Then, when you give your child further commands, he or she will react by being defiant again because this is what you trained him to do. So, in essence, the reverse psychology car is being fueled with disobedience gas because although reverse psychology doesn't cause disobedience, it encourages it. Persistent use of reverse psychology will create the following vicious cycle. 1. Parents use reverse psychology to encourage obedience. 2. Child ultimately fulfills the parent's intended desire, but thinks he's disobeying. 3. Parent gives the next command. 4. Child disobeys because that is what he is used to doing. 5. Parent uses reverse psychology again. 6. Child ultimately fulfills the parent's intended desire, but thinks he is disobeying. 7. Parent gives the next command. 8. The child disobeys because that is what he is used to doing. And so it continues. Repetition of steps 1 through 4 over and over and over again.
And that's basically it in a nutshell. The concept of trust and the concept of reverse psychology. Take the time to listen to this lecture as many times as necessary until the depth of this concept resonates with you. Have a wonderful week.